radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Time, but space is a place that only a human being locates. Where there's so much information to take, there you enter an entirely new place. Once you get on the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
We're all in this thing together. Creations, Professor Griff. You're listening to Junius Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griff from Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Welcome to another edition of the Cyberspace Sanctuary here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. We welcome you to the first program of our new year, 2012. We started off the program with a message in the music from the OJs. We're all in this together. And indeed, we are in this together. And we got to work it out. It means that we all have to put our shoulders to the grindstone, literally, and to put on our thinking caps and think in new ways. Think in bold and innovative, outside the box ways to address the problems facing humanity. And we know that we're up against some awesome forces. As it says in the Bible, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and spirits in high places. And we are indeed wrestling against wickedness in high places, ignorance, and ego, as I define it, as earth-grounded orientation, as opposed to a spiritual and metaphysical orientation. And so it behooves us to free our minds, raise our consciousness, and get involved, become who the Creator intends us to be, and to join in and become co-creators of paradise and the kingdom of God here on earth. And I don't mean this in a religious sense, I mean it in an actuality, because that was the great message that was uttered by the prophets of the New Testament, John and Yeshua. Repent. Repent means to change your mind. It's the Greek word metanoia. You see the word noia for mind, meta meaning to change or beyond, meta as in metamorphosis. Noia, mind. Change your mind. Change the way you think. Change how you think. Change what you think about. Change the thought processes. Unite both hemispheres of your brain to allow your mind, which is a non-material, ethereal entity, to channel and flow through you, and you get the best of both hemispheres and allow us to tap into the higher realms, the higher vibrations, and the higher frequencies to enable us to make better choices about ourselves, about our environment, and about the world. You're logged on, as I said, to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. We're going to take a break for a few messages. We'll be right back with our first guest in 2012, Brother William Reed. Longtime newspaper man, longtime journalist, commentator, editor, former editor, and executive director of the National Newspaper Publishers Association, now who authors a syndicated column entitled The Business Exchange. And we want to welcome him in following these messages, and we'll be right back. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. Keep it right where you have it. Here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul.
Greetings to the Internet Radio family. This is Reverend Valentine speaking. You know, for nearly 30 years, I have had the distinct experience of being interviewed over every medium of communication available to the public. And except for the metaphysical underground, I can think of no other electronic venue that has been more progressive, more innovative, more insightful, more diligent, more diverse in its demographics, and more courageously supportive of the truth than this ever-growing phenomenon called Internet radio. And this is precisely why I'm here to tell you that it is so vital that you give your wholehearted support to it. Tell a friend. In fact, tell 2, 3, and 4 of your friends. If you are a business owner, support Internet radio by telling your customers and constituents all about it. Let them know that there is a legitimate and important substitute to all of the prefabricated, super-censored garbage polluting our public airways today. Don't allow the mass media to continue to treat you like a mindless consumer drone. Enhance your awareness. Indulge your critical thinking, your reasoning, and your analysis. Do as I do. Log on, listen in, and then let it be known all about your internet radio experience. Chimatep, beloved family, thank you for listening. Walk in light.
We'd like to welcome everybody checking in from Real Media Player, from Windows Media Player, from iTunes. We want to encourage everyone to log into our website, which is blakeradio.com, and become familiar with how you can access our broadcast directly from our website. And vice versa, those of you who check in directly from the Blake Radio Network, become familiar with how you can also access us through Real Media Player, through Windows Media Player, and iTunes by logging into their radio tuner guides and doing a search for us in the talk radio genre. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Stay tuned.
Our guest on today's program is William Reed, a longtime journalist, writer, commentator, editor. He was the executive director of the National Newspaper Publishers Association, and he was gracious enough to give me a break many, many years ago. He writes The Business Exchange, which is seen in over 200 newspapers, African-American newspapers around the world. And it's always a pleasure to talk with him because he brings a unique insight and perspective to any conversation we might be having. So he's a resource, and he's someone that we need to read and listen to because he, as we often say, he's one a voice crying in the wilderness. Welcome, brother. How are you? Happy New Year to you.
And a friend, and Happy New Year.
Oh, no question, no question, no question.
And Happy New Year to all of the people listening.
Your latest piece, which is it came out on January 1st, is entitled "When Are We Going to Admit That Race Still an Issue in America?" And you have a quote from a representative of Wells Fargo, which they uttered in 2009. It says, quote, "The NAACP's allegations are totally unfounded and reckless. We have never tolerated and will never tolerate discrimination in any way, shape, or form in any of our business practices, products, or services." And this was a spokesperson for Wells Fargo. Lo and behold, about a month or so ago, it was announced that the Justice Department, due to a suit by the NAACP against several major lending institutions, had garnered a settlement. And that one of them in particular, Bank of America, at the behest of its countrywide subsidiary, was paying out a record number of $335 million. So what does that mean in the overall context of things from your perspective?
What it means is that we so often want to believe the spokesman from Wells Fargo and the fact that discrimination does not exist, and that it's all a fair lending universe when we go in to get a loan, and it just ain't true. It's not true today. It wasn't true in 2009. But credit be to the NAACP. They were the ones that bought the suit in 2009. The people from Wells Fargo were just representative of the other of 14 major mortgage lending institutions, and the way they carried on their business and the way they denied any discrimination. What happened was, after the NAACP brought forth the suit, circumstances caused the Justice Department, for the first time in the history that I know about, to actually go about and look for systemic and organized discrimination. And they found it in Countrywide Lending. Countrywide is now a subsidiary of Bank of America, but at one time Countrywide was the largest, one of the largest lending institutions, and particularly during the period of 2006, 2007, 2008. And Countrywide had a practice of and compensated their sales,
mm-hmm,
and mortgage,
yeah, brokers, everybody, yep,
for steering people to higher loans and putting together the Countrywide and all of the mortgage companies were the villains that caused the 2007-2008 housing bust because of just unethical practices. But in these unethical practices, it was proven by the Justice Department because of studies and because of insider tips and information that Countrywide had, if you don't mind me saying, had gone buck wild in systematically discriminating against black people. The black buyers, the end result is that right now it's a $235 million settlement, and over 200,000 black and Hispanic mortgage borrowers were found to have been discriminated against, and they will in fact receive compensation for the actions of Countrywide. Now, I want to make a point here that's very important. Countrywide is the one that has agreed to this settlement, and Countrywide is a part of Bank of America. But the NAACP went into this suit, Wells Fargo, and I think it's 12 or 13 other lenders were named, and they have not necessarily gotten out scot-free. It's just that this settlement has been made with Bank of America and Countrywide.
All right, now go back, because you mentioned that Countrywide was one of the prime movers in the housing boom, and particularly with the subprime. And I mentioned subprime because once the bottom started to fall out, there were a lot of people who blamed it on purely subprime loans, and they blamed that on the Community Reinvestment Act. They were saying that it happened because the banks were forced to make unsafe, high-risk loans to people in communities of color. What's your take on that, and what's, based on your research and following up on the story, what's the real deal?
Well, your information and your insight is as good as mine, if not better. But the community lending practices, community bank lending practices, had a lot to do with it. But that was, I think this was passed by Congress community lending should be better and more lending to minority neighborhoods. However, during the period, it's very important. So during the period of 2007, 2008, when they were putting together these subprime practices, this was just a way of bundling. Putting together and bundling loans that were just horrible, loans that no one would have.
I mean, to say that the government coerced banks and lending companies to make unsound loans and unsound investments is preposterous. But that's how desperate they were to explain away what was happening.
Well, and I guess at some level of the other, they have explained away, because it's important that you and I point out here, if there hasn't been hordes of people are not going and complaining about what has happened over this period of time. There were, as the Justice Department official said, people. It was discrimination with a smile, and many black people who were getting the loans were just thrilled that they were able to live out the American dream. But in essence, the loans were higher priced, and they had no floor to them, no foundation, and no ceiling. But the banks didn't try to add any substance to it or try to make them good loans. They simply just sold them in the subprime market.
Yeah, what that means is that there are several levels of loans. The subprime was the riskiest loans.
Known to man.
Yeah, and also in terms of the interest rates were higher because of the risk factor. But what happened was they incentivized it so that people who might have had ethical reservations about it got compensated more by sending people who qualified for conventional loans. And this is what happened, and this is what the NAACP and the Justice Department and the Federal Reserve have documented, as well as several other entities. There were many Hispanics, many African Americans who had solid credit backgrounds who could have easily gotten a conventional mortgage. They were shunted to these subprime loans because the brokers and the realtors
got more money
on terms of commission. So what does that tell you about the system?
That was a part of what I was trying to the ultimate lesson I was trying to make in the article that I did, and I do hope that people, particularly those who have access to black newspapers such as the Philadelphia Inquirer and
you mean the Tribune?
Philadelphia Tribune.
That's a Freudian slip.
but the point is, had it not been for the NAACP, this would have just gone on as business as usual. So I'm suggesting that, you know, there's a lot of conversation going around in black communities. I'm sure you've heard it as to just how relevant is the NAACP. You know, what do they do? And you know, why should I send them any money? But this is a prime example of why the NAACP is relevant, and why I guess the Urban League and the whatever other civil rights organizations that you want to put forth, because racism still exists in America today, and it's as the mortgage lending debacle shows, it's still running rampant.
Now, what you implied in your piece, and I agree with it wholeheartedly, was that it was a very determined and deliberate decision to target people of color for these loans. And like I said, it was incentivized. And so what you have is, that you really didn't mention in your article, was what happened once the bottom fell out. You had people of color losing hundreds of billions, if not into the trillions of dollars in wealth that we will never get back.
Okay. I can't give you, I'm just not familiar, but maybe you could help me, but around, you're originally from the Philadelphia area. I am originally from the Washington, D.C. area. Outside of Washington, D.C., we've got a, it's called Prince George's County. Prince George's County is the wealthiest majority black county in the nation. Outside of Atlanta is the second wealthiest majority black county in America. It's called DeKalb County. Prince George's County led the state of Maryland in loan foreclosures because of practices like this. In other words, there was more during the housing debacle of 2008, 2009, 2007. Black homeowners in Prince George's County were foreclosed on much more. I don't have the exact number. Three times as much as the average foreclosure rate in the state of Maryland, as was in DeKalb County in the for the state of Georgia. And it was because of traps such as we've just talked about from Countrywide and from Wells Fargo and other banks that has caused us to cause those loans to go into default. Now, this $235 million that will be going, that the Justice Department has decreed to the victims of this discrimination, average about $1,000 per client.
Per loan, yeah.
What do you call a person who won the
defendant?
Yes.
The complainant.
Yes.
But $1,000, if someone has lost their home, they've lost their credit rating, and possibly in this climate where people are losing their jobs or being scaled back, it's a major victory, and I'm not taking anything away from the initiative for the NAACP and the other people who joined the suit, but the payout is far, far less than what the people have suffered. And I just want to add to this that if you look at what's happening around the country, and one of the goals that they want to accomplish is reducing tort law. And if they're successful, suits like this will become even more difficult to accomplish. And so I think we as a community, because we suffer from what one person called the black tax, and this is just symptomatic of the black tax, where we go and everything we do, most of the things we buy, we pay more for them because there's a systemic notion that they can recoup or boost their profitability and profits off of black people. And so particularly in the ghettos and inner cities where they pay more for inferior products and services, this becomes a norm. And so if the radical fascists are successful and they reduce tort, there'll be no place to get redress ever.
Okay, so if you don't mind, I know you're interviewing me, but I'm going to interview you and say, well, what do we do?
Well, I don't know, because I believe that we have morphed into a banana. People think I'm extreme, but I think this country has morphed into a banana republic. Where the economic apartheid is impacting the everyday life of most of the people. And what you're seeing now in the electoral process is only the well-connected, the well-financed, or the well-to-do can even afford to run, even on a local level now. It's just getting to the point, even on a local level. So that is going to put governance beyond the pale of the average person, particularly when you look at what's happening now, where almost all the U.S. senators are millionaires, and the vast majority of the Congress people, who are supposed to be the chamber of the ordinary everyday person, they're all millionaires. and they all profit from being there. So what does that mean for you and me? I mean, and so and the way things are going now, if I said, well, I think there's going to be civil unrest, maybe civil war or revolution, I'm tagging myself to be put on a list that now that they have this National Defense Authorization Act has just been signed by the president to be disappeared somewhere and end up in some gulag, you know, because they've done away with the 4th, 5th, and 6th amendment to the Bill of Rights. I mean, the fourth, you know, point of the Bill of Rights, you know, habeas corpus, the trial by jury appears, all that kind of stuff. So I really don't know. I can't say. I mean, we are at a long period.
I understand what you're saying, but I want to go back to, isn't it more basic than that? I'm not that, well, during the 1920s and 30s, when there was such a great migration from blacks from the South through the North, is when the organizations such as the Urban League and the NAACP gained their real renown. Isn't it I'm still going back to the fact that shouldn't we still, is our salvation still in having organizations that target and fight for our rights, or should we just go blindly into the mainstream and just be a part of the American melting pot?
Well, the American melting pot is largely a myth. We are a pot full of tribes or various ethnic groups, or now it's getting to the ideological point where you know that becomes important. And so we don't have an ideology other than assimilation. The nationalist group, the nationalist camp, has been silenced for the most part. I mean, you and I pretty much hold the banner.
Are the last remnants of it.
Yeah. And even the younger people are there, and I see them around on various sites or what have you, but they haven't reached out. They haven't realized that we're all in this together and attempted to reach out to some of the older folks who would embrace them, by the way, because, you know, we need to pass the torch on and pass our experiences, insight on to somebody. So you're right. There should be agitation. There should be organization. There should be an attempt to galvanize and coalesce around something very basic. And I think that, unfortunately, with the election of Barack Obama, that has kicked that type of initiative to the curb.
Dissipated completely.
Yeah.
And that's the clarion cry that I'm trying to send out to whomever will listen. Racism still exists in America. Racism is part and parcel of the fabric of America. And unless we do something, unless we have our own organizations and our own governance, or our own people who represent our interests, we will just continue to be fodder in a system that does not recognize us as being full and capable people and organizations, and then people and our institutions and our organizations. And then the other part is that people have given their entire empowerment to political empowerment to the fact that we've got a black president and all things are good. We have integrated. We have integrated the country and the White House, and we really don't have any need for organizations such as the NAACP or anyone else looking out for our interests, because the country, I guess the kind of system that we've got now, we can just rely on that or those people looking out for our interests.
Well, but I think the fact of the matter is there's the equal argument that we cannot depend on the government. I mean, if you look at what's happening just in the last quarter of this past year, 2011, you had the rise of the Occupy movement. Now,
yes.
2 years ago, you had the rise of the Tea Party, but the Tea Party, the original Tea Party people, if you think back, they were co-opted by the Koch brothers and Dick Armey and some other people and rechanneled into the Republican Party. So to the credit of the young people in the Occupy movement, even though a lot of them were, the originators weren't even people in this, they were, some of them were from Canada, they have refused to put up spokespersons, singular spokespersons, to be co-opted and to be attacked and shot down. But if you look at what happened, they were bum-rushed by police, particularly October 31st. There was a coordinated effort, Oakland, New York, and any number of cities around the country. Ironically, Philadelphia opted not to go that route, where they sent in the armed, riot gear, Gestapo police at 1 o'clock in the morning all over the country to take down their communities. It was started, ironically, a couple of days prior in Richmond, which is a city governed by a black mayor, Dwight Jones, one guy I grew up with, went to high school with. So that set the tone. Then several days later, about a week or so later, that same tactic was replicated all around the country. And like I said, Philadelphia eschewed that because they wanted to negotiate with them because they had a situation where they're going to do some construction around where the occupiers were settled in the concourse there. So they used that as a pretext. Okay, we're getting ready to start this construction. Please move. And they did a very soft glove approach. And I'll give Mayor Netter some credit for that. But at the same time, you have this bum rush by the police. And then a couple of weeks later, you have John Corzine, who was a former governor and senator of New Jersey. His company, MF Global, not only goes bankrupt, but they find out they've commingled their clients' funds with their funds, which is clearly illegal. Not one indictment has been issued. I mean, he went up and testified before Congress, but nothing has happened. So people are watching.
Nor have they found the. We're talking about billions of dollars that we can't find.
Right, right. Yeah, but I mean, again, so that the point is, they see the little person getting bum rushed, beat up, pepper sprayed, stomped by horses, and the big guys, $1.2 billion. I'm sorry, missing. Completely, and nothing happened.
And nothing happened. I guess in summary, the point I would like to make from this is the fact that, say it again, we need to recognize the system, the foundation and the systematic discrimination that goes on in America against people of color, and particularly African Americans, and we need to turn towards some solutions or some programs of substance that really look out for our rights, look out for our interests, and support them to support these types of organizations and these types of individuals to maintain our rights and to build our rights and interests and to build upon them.
I agree. I think there's a role for what you do. There's a role for what I do. And as long as conditions are such, I think we have an obligation to ourselves, ancestors, as well as our progeny, to keep on doing what we're doing so that at some point the light bulb will go off collectively, or at least with us enough that it'll be critical mass where our people will say, hey, wait a minute, we need to get ourselves together, because my greatest dread is that we as a people will wake up and find ourselves in the same position that our brothers and sisters in New Orleans experienced back in 2005 without the flood, without the water, in terms of economics, being left behind, no access to the help that was even brought in. Because remember, a lot of people sent first responders, volunteers, water, food, and everything. The government wouldn't allow it to come in into the city and into the perimeter that they had set up around New Orleans. And so that, to me, is a metaphor, an allegory for where we are now, and it's just minus the storm.
In the as we go fully into 2012, I want to wish you and all the people listening cooperative economics, that we reach out to each other, we support each other, and buy from and sell to each other. Would that be something that will help us gain our?
Yeah, as well as sitting down. I don't know about you, but where I live in New Jersey, in the surrounding communities, you can see certain groups have carved out niches. Like the Koreans have carved out a niche in where I live. They pretty much dominate a lot of the dry cleaning. They dominate the nails and manicure, pedicure type things. And they also dominate the distribution of the hair care products that our people buy.
Oh, they definitely have taken over the hair care products industry across the nation. I've been doing some work with the people who used to, well, Madam C.J. Walker, people, and the thing that made Madam C.J. Walker so well off, and the Walker agents and things like that, have now been taken over. The whole distribution process has been taken over by Koreans, and African Americans are no more than.
Yeah, we're just sitting on the sideline. But the same thing, if you look at a lot of times, I don't know what their ethnic groups, but some of them, they look like Indians, but they wear East Indians, but they wear the turbans. They've taken over a lot of the retail gasoline, like the gas stations, whether it's whatever it may be, Sunoco or Citgo or whatever. They're the ones, at least the ones, the out front people that you see. Same thing with some of the retail food chains like Subway. And I'm saying that we need to have a serious economic summit and sit down and say, okay, what do we control? What can we do to make sure we maintain control? And the reason I say that, because several years ago, there was a concerted effort by the Europeans to buy out some of our most successful enterprises, whether it was magazines, whether it was Johnson Products. I know in Philadelphia, a white company bought out a couple of funeral homes that were very successful, and they put, you know, black managers or supervisors there. And same thing happened, Nelson George talks about it in The Death of Rhythm and Blues, that Harvard study where they sat down and tried to determine how they could take over the music industry, recapture the music industry. And so we need to do likewise, sit down and say, look at our community. What can we do to carve out a niche that we can control and build upon? Now,
are you talking about a national conference to do this? Or are you talking about localized meetings and localized objectives?
Well, I'm suggesting both, because there's certain things we can do nationally and that we can build upon. I mean, one of the problems, like, say, the Nation of Islam, they excuse me, they do certain things, but they have an issue with distribution with their newspapers. You know, they if they get trucks, you know, the Teamsters want to come in and tell them, well, you gotta join the union. Our farmers are dying. We need to. I've seen grassroots efforts where some brothers in Philly worked out a deal with some farmers from North Carolina, South Carolina, and I think Virginia, bring up fruits and vegetables to Philadelphia and some of the surrounding areas in Philadelphia. We need to build upon things like that, because if we don't deal with the bare necessities, food, shelter, and clothing, we're going to be in trouble. It's nice to think in terms of big, shiny office buildings, but we need to go back to the basics.
Well, and I would like to say to you, my brother, that I and whatever resources I have will be happy to join you in the year 2012 as we go back to basics for our economic development.
Well, one of the ways that people can do that is to read your column. So tell us where people can get it, either online or in hard copy. And then I have one more question after that, and then I'll let you go.
Well, hard copy, my column is available at most black newspapers across the country, of which, as you mentioned before, there are 210 outlets across the country. So, for example, in New York, it's the New York Beacon newspaper. In Atlanta, it's the Atlanta Tribune. In Washington, D.C., it's the Washington Informer. Online, actually, my column is carried on in a number of places online, but I guess the one that would be most interesting to you is it's on the Right Side website, which is the website for Armstrong Williams. So take a look at it there.
Okay. And the other pieces, have you ever thought of doing a weekly podcast or internet radio or TV type arrangement?
I'd be happy to work with you in whatever I could, but I haven't really been successful. I haven't really conquered all of the modern technology and have it have the resources at within me or within my organization and operation. I travel a lot. I move around a lot, so I don't know how to do it from place to place. So,
well, that's the beauty of the technology. You don't have to be tied down to a specific location. The reason I say that is because in the past past 8 years, some of the newspapers that I write for, and a lot of them weren't part of the NNPA. Now, the Philadelphia New Observer was. They're defunct. The Black Suburban Journal, they're defunct. I'm still with Scoop, which is a community newspaper, still with the Black Star, which comes out periodically due to the health and the financial issues of the publishers. And so the reason I'm saying this is that our papers have suffered the same types of hits that the so-called mainstream newspapers have suffered. And we probably survive better because they're a community paper and we service the needs that are ignored by the white papers. But they're still subject to the economic vicissitudes that the whites are even more so, because we're attempting to right the wrongs and tell the truth and spit in the face of lies and deceit, and corporate America is not going to advertise on any vehicles that do that.
Is there, I guess we could discuss this between you and I, but just to ask, for the podcast and things like that, is there community advertising, or is there a way that the community organizations and institutions can advertise via podcast, and it would be to their advantage?
Probably so, but again, it would be the difference. Podcasts would go out, would almost be like syndication. So say, for example, if a business in Washington, D.C., wanted to advertise, they'd have to look at it in terms of what could they get out of it in terms of a global response. I mean, could they provide the products? If it's just, say, if it's a beauty salon, or they're it probably wouldn't be worth their while. But if they're presenting some other venue or some other product or service that could, say somebody in Los Angeles wanted, and they could ship it to them, then it would be well worth their while.
Well, you know that that's how we met. I'm an old newspaper man, so I have been in newspapers for many, many years, and our advertisers have been the churches, the funeral home,
barbershops,
and these are all localized, and so I just haven't been. We're going to have to expand to get our minds around a bigger marketplace and how.
Well, but you got to remember the history. We always, even though we attempted to do it, the standard model, even for Freedom's Journal, wasn't the same as their European counterparts, Euro-American counterparts, because they couldn't count on them for advertising. So we've always had to think outside the box. So that's nothing new. We just have to get our heads together and do it. It's just that in the past, there was a connection and a mutual benefit from the local businesses supporting the local newspapers. Once we step outside that realm and go syndication or international, then you have to rethink what's available. Well, and you might even do it, you know, just like you might have to do it like a lot of these televangelists and some of these other people, just solicit directly to the listeners.
That's an avenue to consider. So let's look at how we can do that and some other things into the year 2012.
Okay, that's a bet. We'll work on it.
All right.
So look to hear from me, and we'll work on it. I'll send you some ideas, and you let me know yay or nay, and we'll figure out, see what we can do, because I'm looking at it now. It was just the other day I was looking at some things for podcasts. But there are other venues like this, internet radio, that would be glad to have a person of your stature on their roster.
Yeah.
The question becomes, a lot of times, how do you monetize that? And see, for me, I don't get compensated for it, so I don't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Let's move ahead together, my friend.
All right, brother. Happy New Year to you. Stay strong, and you'll be hearing from me.
Thank you.
All right.
And the best to all the people out there.
All right. All right. Stay strong.
Bye-bye.
All right. Our guest was William Reed. His column, The Business Exchange, look for it in an African-American newspaper in your town. He offers a genuine love of black people, an insight, and a concern that you don't find in the so-called mainstream media. It's interesting that with all his years of experience, all the things that he's done, he's been executive director of the National Newspaper Publishing Association, which is the trade organization for well over 200 black newspapers. He's been a writer, he's been an editor, he does PR, he's done all of that. But yet, you won't find him on any of these alphabet outlets. CNN, ABC, Fox as a commentator. When it comes to persons of color, this even more narrow stream. You know, you have Juan Williams, you might have several others, but they don't trust you to fit into that little pigeonhole that they put you in, you know, right, left, Republican, Democrat paradigm, then they don't select you. Now, my perspective would not be welcome on any of them because they're all the same, whether it's PBS or Fox. I mean, they're just different shades and different gradations of the same propaganda, same nonsense, and same mendacity that's promoted over and over 24/7. And unfortunately, too many people feel that they don't have a genuine alternative, where, in fact, there are numerous alternatives. This radio station is one, the Blake Radio Network. Now, we offer a wide variety of hosts who feature and focus on a myriad of topics, but they're all alternative. They're all differing from the claptrap, the mind-numbing menticide that you get in the corporatist media. It would behoove you to be supportive of what we're doing here, because if they're successful in shutting down the internet, as they are attempting to do, and the reason they're doing it is because it truly brings equality as a venue. In other words, minute for minute, we can compete with the big boy, no matter how much money they have, unless they're really you're dealing with bandwidth issues where, you know, tens of thousands of people can come on their site, which is the other side. But take that away. Just say the bandwidth is equal. People can come here and get the same quality, the same enthusiasm, probably more so because we're not being compensated and there's no fear. In other words, those guys over there, if they don't go along with the plan, if they don't go along with the script, they get demoted or kicked off. And once they get the big salaries and the money and the prestige of being around the quote-unquote movers and shakers, hoping some of their stardust and all that kind of stuff will fall off on them, whereas we're motivated by a love of doing what we're doing and a motivation of integrity, remaining true to our core beliefs, values, and aspirations. So that's a big difference. So I'd encourage you to continue listening, continue supporting us here at the Blake Radio Network, and we wish you a happy new year that includes bountiful love, peace, joy, power, but most of all, courage. The courage to find meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in your life so that you evolve into all that the Creator intends for you to be. And your life manifests magnificently as one of a spiritual being having a fulfilling experience here on this material plane and making the world a better place. So until next time, stay strong. You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow. That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try any.